Welcome to the Encourage Podcast. In true Encourage style, today we've got some stories to tell and some real life to talk through. Join us as we build community, celebrate diversity, and become women of courage. Let's start today with an excerpt from Courageous Kindness, written and read by Encourage contributor Eliza Latta.
I was about to cook my first turkey dinner for Thanksgiving. It felt like a big deal. I had no idea how to cook a turkey, but I figured if most people managed to cook a turkey on Thanksgiving, I could somehow figure out how to cook the bird myself. I'd bought all the groceries I needed, far too many potatoes, if I'm being honest, but I've always been a firm believer in having as many mashed potatoes as possible. I decided to cook at my sister's house because she has a bigger kitchen. So I lugged all my groceries from the fridge in my apartment down to my car. It took 3 trips. On my final trip down, turkey tucked safely in my arms, I noticed the door of my neighbor's apartment had water seeping out beneath it. I kept walking, noticing more and more water filling the hallway. I sighed and looked down at the turkey I was holding. I was on a strict timeline. I had even drafted an oven schedule so I'd know exactly what time everything should be cooking. My neighbor popped out from behind her door looking frantic. There's water everywhere. She wasn't speaking to me exactly, but there was no one else in the hallway. For a split second, I considered continuing on my way and pretending I hadn't seen her. But then I remembered a prayer I'd prayed only days earlier. God, give me opportunities to meet my neighbors. I wanted to laugh. God sure answered that prayer quickly. So I stopped and introduced myself. I'm Eliza. I can help. Do you have a mop? I'm Mara, she said. Mara and I talked as we mopped. More accurately, I did the mopping and she did the talking. I couldn't help but smile, though. I briefly whispered a prayer to God and told him, "Hey, thanks for the chance to meet Mara. Maybe this is exactly what Thanksgiving is for." Mara and I didn't become best friends, but we did exchange Christmas cards. And now we smile wider when we see each other in the hallway. My turkey dinner was a little late, but as the day passed and I was able to start cooking, I became more and more grateful for my encounter with Mara. And I started to wonder, perhaps being inconvenienced is actually the best way to love your neighbor.
That story is from the Courageous Kindness Bible Study, available wherever Bibles are sold, including at dayspring.com, where you can use code PODCAST25 to save 25% and get free shipping on your copies. Be sure to join us at encourage.me, where we're going through Courageous Kindness together. Every Monday, we provide reflection questions, the full discussion videos, inspiring quotes, and more. You could join us any day, really, at encourage.me, but the new Bible study comes out on Mondays. Hi,
Anna.
Joy.
Hi, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
It is Turkey Day as this podcast episode comes out, and I love Thanksgiving. I know we tend to go from Halloween straight to Christmas, but I'm a big turkey girl at our house. It's my favorite.
We do turkey even if the tree's up, okay? Like, we don't skip Thanksgiving even if the tree is here.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. The honest truth is if Travis would let me put up the tree already, I probably would have, but he is like the day after Thanksgiving. That is the tradition, so that is where we will stay.
I love it. I love Thanksgiving too. And I love Eliza's story.
I have this little story of the first time I wanted to host Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. I was super young. It was before I was married. I was probably 22 or 20. I think I was 22. And I was renting this little house and I invited a whole bunch of my family. My family's big. So I was probably going to have 20 or 20 some people over for Thanksgiving. And everything was fine. People were bringing things, but I was going to cook the turkey and I'd never made a turkey before. And you know, like it's whatever it is, 15 or 20 minutes per pound, whatever you're supposed to roast your turkey. And I had a big turkey and I had calculated in my head how many minutes total and then divided that by how many hours. And that's how long I was going to cook the turkey.
Mm-hmm.
But math is not my strong suit. Anybody will tell you. And my head, I calculated as if there were 100 minutes in an hour instead of 60 minutes in an hour.
Oh no.
So like where I maybe had calculated, you know, 4 hours to cook my turkey, it really should have been six or something. So I timed everything right to when that bird was going to come out of the oven, and it was not even hot yet. I mean, it was so raw. I think I burst into tears. My mom told me to take a walk, and I took a walk around my house a couple of times and came back in. And of course my mom had appetizers out and like everybody was fine and dinner was postponed a couple of hours and it turned out to be great. But that turkey, that first turkey can be a big deal if you've never done it before.
It sure is. And you know what? She's totally right about the timeline that she mentioned and that you mentioned. Right. I make a Thanksgiving meal, even if we don't host, I still make the meal the next day because I love making it. We love eating it. So I've done this since we got married. So 15 Thanksgivings, and I've got the timeline in my head now, but man, those first good, like 5 to 6 to 7, I had it written out and clipped on the microwave with a magnet. And, you know, I'm checking it all off. And I remember the first one I ever hosted was when we were living at Bible camp, which we've talked about here before. Mm-hmm. And Jared's mom and sister and her husband came. It was just a quiet little group of us in the world's tiniest house. It was, I mean, not a tiny house like on TV, but like a tiny little house.
Does anyone actually have a tiny house, or are they just on TV?
I don't know. We joke about we're going to put one in the backyard for my mom someday, but we'll see.
Yes. Yes.
Anyways, we were in this teeny little cute house, and we put a folding table in the living room because we didn't have enough room for one in the kitchen. And I remember sending Jared to the camp shop, you know, like where they fix stuff, with little pumpkins, and I had him drill a hole in the top of each pumpkin for a candle, and we put him in the center for a centerpiece. And you know what I remember about that Thanksgiving was the joy that it gave me in reading and prepping and shopping and planning, and I got to throw myself into that activity. Yeah. And it was a sad time in our life, and so to have that joy was just a gift. And I think after that Thanksgiving, that joy for it just kind of stuck. I love all the process of it. So yeah. Eliza's story just delighted me.
I host every year, and I normally have 40 to 50 people because we have a giant, now we have a much bigger family because everyone had kids over the last 20 years. But we also tend to pick up any, if you don't have a place to go for Thanksgiving, you can come to my house. So, but this year, you know, we just moved to Oklahoma. So I have a smaller group. We have some family coming, but I decided to just pick back up again and pull every person we can find that doesn't have somewhere to go. They can come to our house. So, okay.
I love it.
Last Thanksgiving thing, because I really do love it so much. my favorite tradition, this is something we do with the kids. So I don't know if you do this, but you have little kids. So I think everyone should do this. And you can do it with their friends too. It can be like, you know, Thanksgiving's for family, but this is a fun thing with friends. Mm-hmm. You have pumpkin pie for breakfast. You have pumpkin pie for breakfast. So you have one pie that's for breakfast, lots of whipped cream. Kids get to spray their own whipped cream on, be really obnoxious. My girlfriend always brings her kids over. Pumpkin pie and bacon for breakfast on Thanksgiving is the best.
I love that. We for sure make my dad taught me pumpkin pie and how to make it the best recipe. I wrote about it in a book, like, pumpkin pie is my dad's thing, and he absolutely makes one for breakfast. He also makes a little extra filling so that he can put it in like the little ramekins and then bake it without the crust, like just whatever's left. You know? And I don't even know how, I haven't thought about this. I only think about it on Thanksgiving. So it's really fun to think about it right now. We always, in the morning on Thanksgiving, I think our first married Thanksgiving, we did this and it stuck. We were driving to go to Jared's mom's, who lives a little far away. So we left early, and we stopped at a gas station for like garbage gas station coffee and donuts. And now we do it. That's what we do with our kids.
On purpose.
Gas station on purpose. We get coffee and donuts, and we get a paper because our local paper has a giant spread turkey to color. And so they each need their own.
Oh, fun.
So that's our breakfast tradition.
You are better than me. We don't make the pies because Costco makes better pumpkin pies than I could ever make. So we don't even try. Thank you, Costco. You're our best friend.
Is there anything better than a Costco-sized pie?
I don't know. They are so good. I mean, to die for. Okay. So we're talking about courageous kindness. Do you have any kindness, compassion stories from Thanksgiving like Eliza's?
Oh gosh. Well, I mean, every time somebody eats something that does not turn out well, I consider that an act of kindness.
Yes. That is so true.
The potatoes are glue or the bird is raw. That's what I was thinking of when you were telling your story of the kindness that your mom just scooped right in and jumped in with your appetizers. And that those little acts of kindness for me are what stand out. I don't have a big story like Eliza's, which I adore, but it's the little ones for me.
I don't have a big story of my own, but we, in our new town now, our friends own a restaurant here called Charlie's Chicken in Pryor, Oklahoma, and they do a free Thanksgiving meal on Thanksgiving. So they don't sell anything that day. Everything is like, come in, get turkey dinner. They advertise it. So the girls are going to go over and help serve dinner on Thanksgiving before we have our own. They're really excited to do that. But that's a very big kindness gesture that's happening here where we live.
I love that.
Well, we have some friends who put together a video. Who's on our video, Anna?
We get to visit each week with Courageous Kindness author Becky Keefe, and she sat down with Grace Pichot and Lucretia Berry, both Encourage writers, and they've been talking through Courageous Kindness this whole time, and we get to listen in. So we've got a clip from week 4 here as they talk about kind of the penultimate scripture example of kindness.
We start off this week in Luke 10:25-37 with a parable of the Good Samaritan. Jesus tells the story in response to a lawyer's question about inheriting eternal life. He asks the expert what the law says, to which he recites, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself." Mm-hmm. Jesus replies, "Do this and you will live." So let's talk about, why is the story such a powerful example of what it means to love your neighbor as yourself?
Oftentimes when we read, or at least when I read, neighbor, sometimes I'm thinking, oh, like my next door neighbor, or mm-hmm. like someone who lives in my neighborhood, which probably shares like the same socioeconomic status,
right.
some similarities.
Right.
Than I do. But here in this story, we are learning and we see that neighbor is pretty much synonymous with human.
Yeah.
Or, one who bears God's image. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if I can be completely honest, it's challenging for me to like look at someone whose ideas and opinions and worldviews actually devalue me. Mm-hmm. And then I'm supposed to consider mm-hmm. this person an image bearer, mm-hmm. Or my neighbor, and then love them as I love myself and have compassion for them. So I'm sometimes a little challenged.
Yeah, I can understand that. That's really hard. I'm struck in the story by the people who passed him by, because like good or not, I feel like them, right? The inconvenience, or even just if I don't look at them as human, like what you were saying, then I don't have to care for them, or I can, it's easy to dehumanize. It's easier than we give it credit for. We act like it's a terrible thing, but it's very easy to do that when we don't see people as human. So I resonate with them. And then I realize the Good Samaritan is someone who saw mm-hmm. and saw this person, saw the humanity, the humanness in the person on the road as he saw it in himself. And that always strikes me as how easy it is to lose sight of that and then treat someone as if they're not like us.
Right. And I think of too that the priest and the Levite are the ones in the story who just kept walking on the other side of the road. And I think you're right that they didn't see this beaten, robbed man as human, as like them. But I think also sometimes, I know for me, like I can get stuck in like the like, this is my lane and I need to just walk in it. And so I know too that the priest and the Levite, for them, you know, they are like servants of God, but to help that bloody wounded man would have been, would have meant to be made unclean. And right. so they were valuing their service to God over a person made in God's image.
Right, right.
And so, you know, this doesn't play out in my life in the exact same way, but I think sometimes like we can have good intentions, but with misplaced priorities. But what stands out to me is how the Samaritan showed that compassion is a verb. Compassion in action. Like, I wouldn't doubt, like sometimes I think we can kind of villainize the priest and the Levite and be like, how could they? And you know, maybe they were terrible guys, or maybe they really felt sorry and they felt badly for the person on the road, but they thought, well, it's not my responsibility, or I have something to do, or, and so I know for me sometimes, like, I can feel sorry for someone. I can see their predicament and be like, oh, like, that's terrible. Like, I wish they weren't in that situation, but it stays at a feeling. But what we see here Jesus saying is compassion is an action. It's a verb. It's doing something to acknowledge the humanity in someone else.
Yeah, because if you feel bad for someone, that just, that means pity. But compassion is, it leads to action. It leads to us doing something or saying something to walk alongside this person, which is what the Good Samaritan did.
The love thy neighbor is an action.
There is so much to that story that goes beyond like the flannel graph Sunday school learning that we've done, right?
Flannel graphs, good times, flannel graphs.
I kind of want one, a flannel graph. Not gonna lie.
If you don't, if you didn't go to Sunday school and you're listening and you didn't, way back in the day, a flannel graph was basically a piece of flannel on a board and then all these little pieces made out of flannel so that it would, they would stick to each other. So they'd tell you a Bible story and they'd stick little shepherds and sheep and Zacchaeus in a tree and Good Samaritans on all those things all over the place and flannel graph. All right.
Old school
back to the very serious video.
we'll let those guys have the serious conversations, you know. There's so much to it, and I love where they took that to end with that compassion is more than pity. Compassion, it's kind of like what we said all along, like kindness is more than being nice. Compassion is more than feeling really sorry for someone. Compassion is an action, and often does lead to being inconvenienced, which was illustrated in Eliza's story, which was illustrated in the Good Samaritan. And I think if we look in our lives, you know, my family is just coming off of a season of an emergency sort of medical situation with part of our family, one of our family members. And not only do we feel sorry for them, we also sprang into action. Like we tried to put that into some action to make a difference, to help, to put that feeling, to put feet on it, you know? And honestly, it was inconvenient. I mean, when we were in the thick of it all, my house was trashed because we were not doing anything in our house. We were doing stuff in their house. And it's not completely altruistic. I mean, like having a clean, picked up, not disgusting house is a thing that I really value. It's hard for me when I have to like literally paw through my closet to find clean jeans that probably aren't even clean, but it didn't bother me. It was a trade-off we were willing to make. To be inconvenienced in order to show compassion. And that was the right choice.
Yeah. Well, taking action on something you didn't plan, whether it's a family member going through something or a Samaritan on the side of the road, the guy that helped him, that wasn't on his plan for the day either. I mean, he had, he was going somewhere else and he stopped and did, I'm sure he did take pity. I'm sure he did have that feeling, but then he also pushed past that into action. And I like how Jesus also pushed things into action often, you know, when people were in need. So here's another example of that. It's in Mark chapter 8, and it's verses 1 through 8. It says, during those days, another large crowd gathered. Since they had nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I have compassion for these people. They've already been with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. If I send them home hungry, they will collapse on the way because some of them have come a long distance. His disciples answered, but where in this remote place can anyone get enough bread to feed them? How many loaves do you have? Jesus asked. Seven, they replied. He told the crowd to sit down on the ground. When he'd taken the seven loaves and given thanks, he broke them and gave them to his disciples to set before the people, and they did so. They had a few small fish as well. He gave thanks for them also and told the disciples to distribute them. The people ate and were satisfied. Afterward, the disciples picked up seven basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. I really relate to the disciples in this because if you've ever come to my house, you know that I'm always afraid there's not going to be enough food. Like, no matter how much I make, especially on Thanksgiving, I'm like, I didn't make enough potatoes. And I usually tend to just overdo it because I don't want there not to be enough food. Now, that's like with a legit plan. This was with no plan, 4,000 right. people, seven it's loaves
a lot.
Of bread.
It's a lot yeah. of people.
It's not much, seven loaves of bread and some fish. And yet Jesus takes his compassion to a whole nother level here by actually doing a miracle and feeding all these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Literally taking, I mean, standing in the gap. None of these people brought food. I don't know what they were thinking, but they didn't bring food. And this, you know, this kid, they had a meager offering. And it's one of my favorite Jesus stories and miracles, this one, probably because it's about feeding people, which we have talked about numerous times together. And I love what he does with our smallness.
Yeah, he does. And it's just one more reminder that, you know, he really already has provision for us. I mean, mm-hmm. the Bible tells us over and over that God has provision for us today. God has compassion for what's going on in your life. He will take action with what's going on in your life. He will provide for you just like Jesus did for these people. And Thanksgiving, I know we're all about thankfulness and gratefulness. And today is really a day that we focus on that. So let's do that. Let's be thankful, you know, that God's taken compassion on us, that he moves to action in our lives. And he really does supply all of our needs over and over again.
And with his compassion, he is not inconvenienced by us.
Right.
We bring him joy. We bring him delight. He dances over us. Jesus yeah. didn't like huff around and stomp because he had to do this lunch thing. I mean, he's not inconvenienced by our needs and our wants and our asks and our prayers. He loves them and he loves us.
I think that's the perfect way to end this today. Listen, we hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving. We hope that you feel kindness and compassion from others and that you are also able to really go out of your way to love your neighbor this weekend.
That's it for this week, friends. Be sure to visit encourage.me/Bible Study Mondays for more discussion on this week of Courageous Kindness. You can see the full video, get more reflection questions, and join in the conversation about Courageous Kindness. Again, be sure to use code podcast25 at dayspring.com to save 25% and get free shipping on your copy of Courageous Kindness. And you can find us everywhere on social at encourage. That's encourage with an I. We would love to hear your stories of kindness and Thanksgiving.
And hey, here's another little tip. That podcast 25 code will work, but since it is Thanksgiving today, big Black Friday sale happening over at dayspring.com too. So if you have not done your Christmas shopping yet, this is the weekend. Go over there and do that. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to this after Thanksgiving weekend, I'm sorry you missed it. But if you subscribe and listen right away, you won't be sorry. So happy shopping. Encourage podcast is brought to you by Dayspring, makers of your favorite cards, books, and gifts. Visit them today at dayspring.com.